This is the 2 North Jackson Podcast with news, insights, details, and accomplishments from Alabama's 67 county governments. Welcome to the December edition of the 2 North Jackson Podcast. This month, we'll examine a story of cooperation and success, overcoming Mother Nature, and the county's strong voice on the retirement system of Alabama. We'll begin this month's podcast with a discussion of A Trip 2 and with our friend Ed Austin. Ed, thanks for joining us. Well,
Sonny, I appreciate the invitation and great to be here with you guys, and I look forward to having a meaningful discussion about A Trip.
Well, you know, I feel a little funny jumping all the way to A Trip 2. We've had such a long history together, and for people who are kind of new in county government, I wanted to stop a minute and talk about your history and things that have gone on that people probably aren't aware of. It's almost 5 years ago to the day that we were working on Rebuild Alabama, and that includes this A Trip 2 initiative that's been very, very good for counties. But if we dial back a little bit, where I had a little hair and you were a little younger, you started in the County Transportation Bureau.
I did, actually, back in 1999. So almost 25 years ago, I started working in the County Transportation Bureau. And shortly after beginning in there, we did the first one of these types of programs, the Amendment 1 program under then Governor Siegelman. And so I was heavily involved with that program, which led to, several years later, the original A-Trip program in 2012, and my transition out of county transportation into the Innovative Programs Bureau in 2012 that spearheaded the efforts from ALDOT's perspective on the original A-Trip program.
Again, for those who are kind of new in county government, that original Amendment 1 program was aimed primarily at county bridges. We did a remarkable job at the time, we thought. And then that A-Trip comes along in 2012, and you moved from transportation to head the Innovative Programs Bureau, which was a fancy name for the A-Trip program.
That's right.
And during the course of 4 years, more than $1 billion in road projects and bridge improvements around the state, and most of it was county money.
That's right, Sonny. So about, as you said, a little over $1 billion in a 4 to 5 year period for the A-Trip 1 program. Several of those were county projects, a large percentage of those, and to think that we were able to push 700 projects through the letting system is a testament to a lot of hard work at the county engineers level, our consultants that worked with us on those programs, and the contractors that had to build all those projects in a fairly short period of time. So a great success story for everybody involved.
Well, it was. Looking back on it, it was something just this side of a miracle for that to happen, for that structure to be stood up. And your leadership, they are recognized by everybody in the state and led to you becoming the chief engineer in the department, which means the buck stops on your desk, right?
That's right.
Part of that is the operation of the A-Trip 2 program that was really a brainchild out of a morning when John Cooper, longtime director, super friend of counties, was here at 2 North Jackson Street. The morning before all the final details were put together on the legislation, and he said, I got an idea. Why don't we do a portion of this money on a cooperative local government ALDOT program? And from there, A-Trip 2 was born. There was a committee directed, and you've led that for the last 5 years, and it's been a really good program for counties.
Well, it has. It's been a really good program for the state as a whole, counties especially. And you're exactly right. The A-Trip 2 program and the committee structure was based very strongly on the original A-Trip 2 structure. There's a lot of similarities and a lot of differences in the programs, specifically the funding. The A-Trip 1 was more federally funded, while A-Trip 2 is state funded. But we have a committee structure that's very similar. The current committee structure for the A-Trip 2 group is made up of 3 state senators, 3 state representatives, a local government representative, which is Tony Cherry, for past president of ACCA, does a great job and has been a member of the committee since its inception. And then, of course, the director, Mr. Cooper, is the chair of that committee, and we meet regularly over the course of a month or two once the applications are received. And we've already had our original committee meeting for this fiscal year of 24, and we look forward to following the same kind of a structure for ATRIP 2 this year, with an announcement probably sometime in January or February by the governor's office on the projects that will be awarded this year.
And the idea of ATRIP 2 was to give the local officials and local engineers, both county and city, the opportunity to bring some local projects to the table that would primarily be on the state system, but projects that are of import at the local community. And I know that there are a number that are already completed at the county level, but a couple in Autauga and Coffee County specifically, I know, that highlight this cooperative approach that has really been the theme of ATRIP 2.
You said we're starting our fifth year, and through the first 4 years, there have been several projects awarded through the counties, about 35 that have been awarded, 11 of those the first year, and all 11 of those projects have been let to contract, have gone well. In the second year, there were 9 projects awarded to counties, and 8 of those have been awarded. Unfortunately, we had one that was allocated to a county that the scope of the work got away from us a little bit, and so we've had to table that one project. But overall, that fiscal year has gone really well. Fiscal year 22, so a couple of years ago now, there were 7 projects awarded to counties, and 4 of those have already been let to contract, and the other 3 are moving forward. And then last year, there were 5, and we've already let 4 of those to contract. We've got 1 left. So we're at about an 85 or 90% success rate on projects sponsored by the counties. And those projects are moving forward at the speed we expected, anticipated, with the county's past experience in these kind of programs being what it is.
You know, we've kind of learned how to do these things together. We've gotten a wrinkle or two on our forehead along the way. but the county engineers have embraced this project just as they did ATRIP, just as they did the bridge bond issue program. We called Amendment 1. And this one is a little different, but the whole funding mechanism for the operation has evolved and changed as well. And I think these 3 major projects that you've really set at the table in a leadership position really exemplify what I'm perhaps proudest of over the years between ALDOT and the counties, and that is we've figured stuff out together and we've solved problems together.
You've hit the nail on the head. So the program in 2000, as you said earlier, was primarily a bridge-focused project, and we did several hundred bridges in that program across a very short period of time. And then you fast forward 10 years and the original ATRIP program hit, and we did several hundred projects, bridges and roadway projects. And now this program has grown, and we've developed, we've taken those lessons learned from the previous 2 programs and refined how and what we do. And I think that, as you said, the success has shown. There's been almost $40 million allocated to the county so far through the ATRIP 2 program, resulting in some meaningful projects being addressed. You mentioned a couple earlier in Autauga and Coffee County. So in 2020, there was a project awarded in Autauga County for about $525,000. So more on the smaller end. Not all these projects have to be at the large end of the scale. You know, you can go as high as $2 million, but there's a lot of things that can be done that are meaningful that are less than $2 million. This was a little over $500,000 project. They were adding some turn lanes at US 82 and a county road 47, locally known as Golson Road. They were having a lot of heavy truck traffic through there and needed those turn lanes in order for the traffic to continue moving. Led it to contract. It went smoothly. Got actually a lower bid than what we thought. So a success story.
Those days are past.
That's right. The county engineer there, John Mark, has been involved with these programs for years, even as before when he was an assistant in Butler County, and has done a great job with those projects. But he's got a success story there that shows you don't have to spend $2 million and take 2 or 3 years to develop a large-scale project. You can do something that's meaningful to the citizens in your county that sometimes it doesn't take that much to do. And then the Coffee County project is a larger project, about $1.6 million. It was awarded in 2021, and it was intersection improvements at a county road, 239, where it intersects State Route 167. Had a lot of truck traffic again and some accident history that needed to be addressed. led it to contract in February of 21, and it was finished in early 2022. Another success story, came in a little under cost and really has done a lot of positive things, and they've got accident data that has dropped as a result of this project being addressed. So a couple of just success stories at the local levels with the counties that really have shown that this program is making a meaningful impact across the state.
Well, and again, I remember the morning Mr. Cooper was sitting upstairs, and his idea and concept on this project was exactly what you just described in those two counties. You know, I remember him saying, I know there are projects out there that are important to y'all that aren't on our radar. Let's take some money and let's use it for those things. And it's taken a while for us to get our rhythm on applications and what kind of projects. But there's no question this has been a hugely successful part of Rebuild Alabama that for all of us is going to still be the crowning jewel of our careers, really, the passage of that legislation.
No doubt. And you know, you mentioned how Mr. Cooper explained it to you. I've heard him use that same analogy to the committee. You know, there are a lot of meaningful projects that ALDOT just doesn't wake up every morning thinking about. But somebody on that county commissioner and that county engineer's office is. And there are a lot of people at that local level that are thinking about those projects as how an improvement there can be meaningful to their in their daily lives from a safety perspective or whatever it may be. And so you're absolutely right. Being able to address these projects through this program has really been a crowning jewel for all of our careers.
It has been. And I know we're about ready to get started on the applications and review for this year's award, too. So county engineers who want to talk about it, they know how to reach your staff, right?
Well, absolutely. I would be remiss if I did not mention the staff at the local transportation bureau that does such yeoman's work with this program. And between this one and the annual grant program, there's not many months that they're not processing or working through the application process for these programs. Brad Lindsay and his staff, James Boyer and Leanne Williams, do great work. When you call ALDOT, my name may be on the information, but those three people are the ones that are going to be doing the heavy lifting there. And if you have questions, they're the ones that are going to provide those answers.
Well, Ed, we appreciate your leadership. We, more importantly, appreciate our friendship and relationship for a long, long time. And I'll say before we kind of conclude, the relationships that are there between the county engineers and the professionals at ALDOT that they work with every day, it's vitally important to us, and I appreciate the time that you have taken during your whole career to cultivate those relationships, to be at our events. We just appreciate you very much.
Well, thank you for saying that, but I've gained as much or more from it through my career as y'all have. But it's always my pleasure to catch up with old friends and meet new ones at the County Engineers Conference. I spoke a couple of weeks ago to your legislative conference and to the breakout session with the engineers, and there's a handful of engineers still left in there. But as I joked with them, told them those of us that are still in there that know each other, our hair's either turning gray or turning loose. So
we're having trouble remembering each other's names.
That's sometimes. But it's been my pleasure, and it's been a joy for me to work with counties. You know, it's meaningful when you're driving out and about in your daily commute and you see a project like this that you know you had a small part to play in that is meaningful at that level. So it's always nice to see those.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, Ed. Well,
Sonny, thanks. And good to see you as always.
You too.
Thank you.
And now we'll turn our attention to the Dallas County Juvenile Detention Facility, which was severely damaged last year in January, but today is fully operational with the hard work and cooperation of friends all over county government. We have the director, Marcus Hannon, as well as the assistant director, Kimberly Bonner, with us today. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us, Sonny.
Well, it was January 12th last year, a day I suppose that started like any other day, and then things quickly changed at the Dallas County Juvenile Detention Center.
One of the main things that changed during that day is that it was around 9:30 in the morning, and I have to give our staff all the credit. All the tornado drills, severe weather drills that we do, it came in handy. They got the kids in the right places, and throughout all the damage that we had, not a kid, not a staff was hurt or injured during that time. So it was a blessing, and also I give them the credit for making sure all the kids were where they're supposed to be and for themselves.
Well, for those who aren't familiar with the Dallas County Juvenile Detention Facility, it is unique in that it is operated by the County Commission, located out on Highway 14. And we read a lot and heard a lot about the damage to the Dallas County Jail, essentially a total loss. But the juvenile detention facility was severely damaged as well. And remarkably, as you said, none of the employees or the residents there were injured.
You're correct. We had roughly around between $6 to $7 million worth of damage, and not an employee was hurt. We had several employees' cars that were total, but those are things that you can replace. The key thing is that we didn't have anyone hurt during that time.
And suddenly, you have to turn your attention to how do you house and take care of these youth that are there for services that are vital to their ability to be able to continue their lives in a productive way. And I know that we talk about us having a county family, and certainly you received help from around Central Alabama, right?
Yes, indeed. First of all, I would say our county commissioners and also the local counties such as Tuscaloosa, Montgomery County, and Dothan County, they came to our aid in helping us getting our kids relocated into a safe environment. And our staff just went above and beyond and making sure that happened. We had no power, no lights, no heat or no anything here. We stayed here to like 12 to 1 o'clock in the morning. And this happened at 9 in the morning. We stayed here at 12, 1 o'clock that next morning to get the kids situated and get them transported to another facility.
And that's just really just amazing to me. Not only that no one was injured, but in the midst of all this turmoil, you have these youth that have been sentenced there, and you're able to reach out and find others to help you around the state. And Ms. Bonner, I know that that had to be a little different than what you had planned on doing on January the 12th.
Absolutely. Like Mr. Hannah said, there's no playbook written for this, but with the tenacity of the staff, everyone pulled together and worked it out.
And then we fast forward to today, the detention side of your operation is fully operational, up and housing. How many kids are there today?
As of right now, we have a total of 11 kids in to now. And also we service in the Black Belt County, we service Hale County, Lowndes County, Wilcox, Perry County, Marengo County, and Dallas County, and Greene County.
And you have room for how many kids in terms of under normal operation?
We have a total bed space for 24, and we service kids from the ages of 13 to 18, someone who just may have stole something at Walmart or someone who just committed murder.
And they're housed there. For those who aren't familiar with the process, they're awaiting hearing, and then some of the detainees go to the custody of the state Department of Youth Services, but others go to other programs.
Yes, they do. Every kid has to be seen by the juvenile judge within 72 hours of being detained, and then a trial date is set. And in that trial date, several things happen. Either that kid is being released back to their family, or that kid is going to be detained here for another week or so, or that kid is going to be sent to DYS, Department of Youth Services, and also through other counties. It might be a group home, might be alcohol, substance abuse, it might be anger management. It would be sent to some of those facilities that house and to help these kids throughout the state of Alabama.
Well, and this is an amazing service for the county commission to have undertaken, when in most of the other areas around the state, it's nonprofits and other independent groups. But I know you've got one portion, a very exciting portion of your program that's not quite yet on its feet. Could you talk a little bit about the Varner Educational Treatment Program?
Yes. Before I state on that, also, as you said about, it's unusual for county commissioners to have a juvenile detention center, and it is. And I have to give credit to our county commissioners and our probate judge. They have been, awesome in making sure that we have everything that we need and support that we need to continue to serve our kids in the Black Belt. One of their mottos is that who else can serve our kids better than the people here that they're surrounded by? And so they do all that they can to make sure that our funding and make sure that we have the things that we need. So I have to give them kudos in that scenario. Perry Varner is an educational treatment facility. That's one of those facilities that the state can use in sending their kids here. Perry Varner is an educational treatment facility, which is how we house kids there for a total of 8 weeks. And in that program, we try to get them back online, to get them back in society, to be productive at school and also in their community.
And is that part of the program is not up and running now? Is that still related to the repairs from the tornado?
Yes, sir. Well, our goal is to have it up and running no later than February or March of 2024. Matter of fact, I just got a call from Jefferson County asking the date when when we'll be open, because they're ready to send some kids towards us.
Well, I'll just be honest with you, Ms. Bonner. For me, I've been involved in county government for 35 years, and I didn't know that Dallas County had this juvenile detention center. And I know that you've been involved along with Mr. Hannon since 2008. Could you talk a little bit about how rewarding it is to work with these students?
Absolutely. Just the opportunity to work with these kids. And we speak with them. Mr. Hannah and I, we're not just office bears, if you would allow me to say. We get out and we talk to the kids on a daily basis, and we let them know we all mess up. But this is an opportunity, if they will, to just take it step by step and use this moment. All the services that we provide as far as anger management, drug and substance abuse, we have a guidance counselor here that go from the simple thing is how to tie a tie. And just life skills in general is very rewarding.
Ms. Bonner, I know that you've been here since 2008, and clearly that's a passion, and thank you for sharing that with us. But Marcus, your story and your connection goes back farther than your time as director of this facility, right?
Yes, sir. As a juvenile, I was arrested 4 times during my career during that time. And the same facility that I'm now the director of, I once served in this facility. I've been working here part-time since 1993 when I was teaching school here. So this has just been a part of my life basically since I was 14, 15 years of age. And now I'm 55.
And now the director, certainly it gives you insight into the things that the students who come to the facility for help, you understand what they're facing.
That's my passion. That's one of the key things. And in hiring people here is not just being them to say they're locked up. It's to give them, I want people to be able to relate and understand what a lot of the kids go through. I came out of a single parent home. God bless me with an athletic ability, in which I received a basketball scholarship. Without that basketball scholarship, I would have probably been here longer than those 4 times I were here. And no telling where I could have been. So, again, if it wasn't for people that came into my life that were out here, and also people that I came in contact around through the Brown YMCA, these people helped me change my life. My goal here is trying to help these kids change their life.
Well, and it's amazing that as we sit here today and near the close of 2023, that in less than a year, the facility has been put back into operation. You're back impacting the lives of the youth from all over the Black Belt. And I just want to thank you for your hard work, both of you, Marcus Hannon, director, and Kimberly Bonner, assistant director of the Dallas County Juvenile Detention Center. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Sonny.
Thank you.
And next, we'll visit with our friend Ricky Harcrow, who's chairman of the DeKalb County Commission, an absolute fixture with the association, and was president. Ricky, I can't believe it was a decade ago when you were president of the association.
I'm telling you, time gets away, doesn't it?
Do you remember your nickname?
Yes, sir. The teacher. You gave that to me.
That's right. And
I still got my apple sitting right in front of my desk.
Well, Pat, yeah, and you've taught me a lot. I've learned patience from you. Your demeanor and my demeanor are about as different as they could be. I've tried to be a little more patient and calm in this decade since you were president. But we're going to visit today and talk a little bit about a different role that you have, which is representing all of county government on the State Employees Retirement Board of Control. County family may remember that Ricky was a candidate for that position and was elected and took office back in August of 2022. Tell us what it means to be on the board and the demands on your time and those kinds of things.
Well, first of all, let me say how much I appreciate the opportunity to serve. You all were kind enough to get that position allocated to us, and we, of course, got legislation passed to add a member, and I was fortunate enough to be elected to that by wide margin with the help of all our county family, and it's a real privilege for me to be on this board of control. I serve with several people that, of course, who are familiar to the association. Former chairman of Madison County, Mike Gliss, Bill Poole, our finance director. And so It's really a privilege for me to serve on this board, and I have learned so much by being there. There was really so much I didn't know that I've come to know, and I am so appreciative of the opportunity to get to just hear the particulars of our retirement system. And I think that if so many of our participants in our system understood what goes into this process, how appreciative they would be, because it's not just some overnight situation. I mean, plan after plan after plan after plan goes into this process. And Dr. Bronner is a genius at it, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, and you put your finger on the importance of your role, and that is the thousands of county employees that rely on what we all recognize as the best public pension program in the country. You and I are both relying on it, too. So while you're there, please make sure that it stays solvent, okay?
Sure. You know, we have between 57 and 58,000 retirees right now receiving benefits. I mean, it's $112 million a month that goes out. Wow. I mean, that's over $1 billion, almost $1.5 billion a year. So it takes a lot of foresight to put all these things in motion.
That's hard for a little boy from Tuscaloosa to fathom that just the benefits portion approaches $1.5 billion. And a big part of that's county employees.
It sure is. And, you know, just last year, we had nearly 1,200 retire come into the system. That's just last year. So one of the things, though, that keeps me interested in is to see how well our system is doing. Comparatively speaking, and you hit the nail on the head, there's none like it in the United States of America, I assure you. Our margins of income from our investments are far better than anybody's in the United States. And that doesn't mean everything's perfect, but there's some investment that does better than others. Some didn't do too well in the last year. But with all the properties that we have, there is not one building that, not one office, let me go that far, there is not one office space available, according to Dr. Bronner, last Tuesday, in our whole system. Can you believe that?
Again, it's just a testimony to Dr. Bronner's vision, but then also the vision of the board members. You know, from where I sit, the truth of the matter is, for the association's activities, people give me way, way too much credit. Without the board of directors' support and leadership, y'all would have looked for a different director long ago. And the leadership that the board provides for Dr. Bronner and the support y'all give for him, you know, I'm looking out the window right here from my office right now, and you know, there's a big hole out there. Where there's going to be, where the State House is going to be, right? Straight across the street from the association's building.
And I have right before me right now our packet about the information, the contracts, and everything that, of course, we approved that in September, but last Tuesday when we met again, we went back over that. And as you say, you can look out the window and see what's going on over there. But we're going to finance that project for the state at 8%, which is going to be $350 million, maybe closer to $400 million. You never know when you get up in those kind of numbers and what's going to come along unforeseen. But between $350 to $400 million is going to be fixed for us for the next 25 years. And so that alone is going to be a big benefit to our program. And not only that, Sonny, but I wasn't aware about the golf courses and the properties that the RSA owns. Dr. Bronner told me at lunch, and we were, you know, there are 600,000 to 700,000 golf players that come to our golf courses over the year. And that's phenomenal. There's nothing like that anywhere in the world than we've got right here.
No question. You know, in a few minutes, I'm gonna head to Prattville. And I remember before that facility was built there, there were no motels, very little retail business. And I don't know what percentage of the people who stay in that dozen or so motels that are right there by the golf course are golfers. But in the summer, I suspect the vast majority are people who are coming to the Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail. And, you know, when I travel, if I wear an RTJ shirt, somebody's going to stop me and tell me that they've been to Alabama to play golf.
I've never seen anything like it or even heard it. If somebody else would have told me that, I wouldn't have believed it. We have the facts and the figures of what kind of revenue that generates for our system. And not only that, just the properties that we own all over the United States, and even in large cities like Los Angeles, Chicago, New York. And it's just mind-boggling for a country boy from Sand Mountain to have just a little understanding of what all goes into this process. And I appreciate so much the opportunity of being a part of it, because I've been on the commission nearly 30 years, and I certainly don't know it all, but I'm going to tell you something. Being on this board has helped me with being chairman of the county commission as much as anything else, because I saw improved ways how to work what I need to work with.
Well, and I wanted to talk a minute before we close about that role as county commission chairman. You've got employees in DeKalb County who are depending on this retirement benefit. I dare say many of them stay with the county because of this retirement.
Yes, sir.
And so your role is to make sure that all of county government continues to enjoy and be able to rely on this resource.
There is not a day goes by but what somebody mentions to me about the retirement system, knowing that position I'm in. And there's not a day goes by that I don't have some good news for them of how we're progressing in that. Now, I know things can change, but the fact of the matter is our system is in a position to last. And, you know, Social Security is not in that position.
No.
But our we're in far better financial condition for the long haul than our Social Security system is. And our people, you're right, our people are depending on that, and they're depending on me. I mean, I can't emphasize that enough. And sometimes that goes to bed with me, if you want to know the truth about it. I carry it home with me because I know I've got employees here, but I also represent the ACCA, which is the best organization I know of. And I thank them for letting me be in this position, because they created that position through legislation, and I'm fortunate enough to be the first one to serve on it. And it's just a joy to me to see the progress that we're making. Now, everything's not perfect. I'm not saying that. But I'm just telling you that our system, or our program, our retirement system, is in great financial condition. We're doing well. And I want our members to know how much I appreciate what they did for me and letting me be on that. And if that changes, I'll let you know.
We're grateful for you being willing to serve. There couldn't have been anybody more prepared and who could be a more reliable voice for counties than you. And we're grateful for you serving, and you keep up the good work. We'll have you back on in a few months to talk about this again. But we hope that you have a great new year, and we look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks at the district meetings in North Alabama.
I appreciate it so very much.
As we approach the end of 2023, we wish you a safe, prosperous, and successful 2024. Be sure to join us on January 31st for the next edition of the 2 North Jackson Podcast.